And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Being a talk radio host, when you tell people what you do, they often want to talk politics with you, and that makes sense. I tell them, look, I do that for a living. We don't have to talk, but people seem to have a desire to talk politics, and that's okay. Like I said, I try to encourage them to come here on the show and do it. They usually want to grab me wherever I am, a party or a grocery store or something, and talk politics there. So sometimes I do, and sometimes I don't. More often I do, and fairly often I regret those things. Because, you know, in the context of a radio show, you have a history. People know who you are and where you stand. You can bring in facts. You can show people websites. But just talking with people one-on-one, particularly those who are not that well-informed about politics, you find that a lot of people say a lot of things that turn out to be contradictory. And you can't really blame them. It's the kind of things that the media reinforces. It's the kind of things that some of the candidates reinforce. And yet, it's amazing to me how many times I hear from someone, and it could go on, you know, for an hour, and it could be friends, family, colleagues, strangers. But they'll say things like, all Democrats and all Republicans are the same. They're exactly the same. Makes no difference. Tweedledum, Tweedledee. And then they'll say in the exact same breath, why can't people put partisanship aside and do what's best for the country? Now, if you don't see the immediate contradiction between those two sentences, then that's part of what I want you to listen to this hour, a show I'm calling The Perils of Bipartisanship. Because so many people will tell me exactly those two sentences, and I'm going to repeat them. One, all Democrats and Republicans are the same. Tweedledee, Tweedledum, there's no difference between them. And why can't people put partisanship aside and do what's best for the country? Now, I want you to think about this logically. Democrats and Republicans have choices on each and every issue of the day. They can work toward agreement. They can work toward compromise. They can work toward achieving something. Or they can work to delineate themselves, to separate themselves on the issue, to stand apart from each other, to stand out for different things. Fine. And that's true on any issue. I mean, it could be anything from energy policy to health care to gun control to the war in Iraq, really anything. There's two choices, right? They can either agree or disagree. And I understand that sometimes you can disagree in different ways. There can be, you know, three stands on an issue. And that's possible in some cases, though many times the issue is, you know, plus or minus, pro-choice, pro-life. There are degrees of how much you support a woman's abortion rights in the middle. I understand that. But there's sort of two bipolar ways to look at it. Either the fetus is a living human being that should not be killed, and even if you evacuate, a blastocyst, which is 8 cells just after conception, then that's murder. And, you know, the woman should get the death penalty. I mean, that's the true pro-life hardcore position. And the true hardcore pro-choice position, I guess, is that abortion is never a problem, that fetuses are expendable as anything, and it's a woman's body. She should always decide. I happen to believe, while I'm pro-choice, there's a little bit of a middle ground. I think the Roe v. Wade middle ground, the idea that once a fetus is about to become a baby a few weeks prior to term or something like that, then I don't think you can just abort a baby unless the woman's life or health is in danger. But I don't want to get on the side topic of abortion. My larger point is this. If you hear someone say to you, the Democrats and Republicans are all the same, and in the same breath, the same person says to you, why can't people put partisanship aside and do what's best for the country? You need to remind them those are contradictory ideas. Because if Democrats and Republicans are going to put partisanship aside and do what's best for the country, they've got to compromise. They've got to find agreement. They've got to find some middle ground which they can agree on. And then, yes, the two of them will be the same. They'll support the same compromise policy. So if you want them to put partisanship aside, if you want them to compromise, fine. But then don't say in the same breath they're all the same. And to the contrary, if You don't want them to be the same. If you want the Democrats to fight the Republicans every step of the way, if you want the Democrats to stand on principle to do things like impeach the president and the vice president, to do things like shut the government down if they have to in order to stop the war in Iraq, if you want that, if you want the Democrats to differentiate themselves from Republicans, fine. But then don't argue that they need to put partisanship aside and do what's best for the country. Then what you want the Democrats to be is more partisan. You want them to do less compromise, and that's okay too. Indeed, many times I argue that's exactly what the Democrats should do. And you can be different on different issues. You could argue that on the war in Iraq, they need to be partisan. The Republicans have had long enough. They need to shut the government down. But on the issue of energy policy, well, maybe half a loaf is better than none, and maybe they should compromise with the Republicans if they can't get rid of the huge corporate subsidies to oil companies, which all right-minded Americans and certainly all Democrats are against. At least if they can raise the fuel standards for cars and slowly wean us off of our addiction to oil. Well, that's a good thing. That's part of the way. It's not all we'd want, but hey, sometimes a compromise is better than none. Again, that's okay. But it's amazing how many people say the same thing. They should compromise more and they should compromise less. They should be more bipartisan and more partisan. Say it in the same breath and don't realize they've had a contradiction. Let me give you another two quotes that you will often find with someone who really hasn't thought through, I would argue, their positions. And I got to tell you, I have these arguments all the time. These are not phantom people. These are people I talk with every single day about politics, usually the ones who don't listen to my show. I've heard someone say, the Democrats don't stand by their principles. They're just like the Republicans. And then say, why can't the Democrats work with Republicans? It's the same idea. The same idea as what I've said before. Another contradiction, one I was talking to just the other day, someone who called himself an independent, and he said, the Democrats spend just as much as the Republicans. They're just as corrupt as the Republicans. They support as many earmarks as the Republicans. And in the same breath, he said, the Democratic Congress hasn't accomplished anything. And he didn't see the contradiction. Do you? Let me repeat. First, he says, the Democrats, they spend just as much as Republicans. They support all the earmarks Republicans do. And then he says, the Democrats haven't accomplished anything. Well, if you know anything about the earmark battle, you know exactly what happened. The Democrats tried to stop any earmarks except for those that are approved by committee. The problem with earmarks, by the way, and what is an earmark? It is a special federal money given to a particular district. Robert Byrd, Senator of West Virginia, has been very successful in bringing home the pork for his district. So has Congressman Murtha of Pennsylvania. But in many ways, they're pikers compared to the Republican Congress, where they would get lobbyists like Jack Abramoff to funnel all kinds of dollars for all kinds of things. Famously, the Bridge to Nowhere in Alaska and a certain request to build a rainforest in Iowa, where rainforests aren't that common. I guess it was for research. Anyway, the problem with earmarks in general, in my view, is when they don't go through committee, they're sort of pasted on at the last minute and no one gets a chance to review them, and so in there is a lot of pork and waste. Now, if you have, again, in my view, if you have a federal thing, if something that should use federal money. Let's say you have a university-sponsored program to study and cure cancer at the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota. And now, you know, that might help the local population of Minnesota, but this is a national thing. Everyone would benefit from a cure for cancer. The clinic is a very respected one, and if they're the ones who have the best proposal at the best price to do the most good for the most people throughout the United States, fine. That's not an earmark. That, as far as I'm concerned, is proper government spending. And it can go through committee, and people can analyze it. And if it's fine and it's a federal purpose, fine. Now, if it's a bridge in Alaska, it seems to me that the people of Alaska can vote for that bridge, or the people on that island can vote for that bridge. Now, I understand there are some things that are both federal and state, and those things are complicated. I mean, if you have a major interstate like 95 that goes through the Northeastern Corridor, a lot of people outside of those states use that. But that's my general point about earmarks. But listen to what the speaker was telling me. He was saying the Democrats are just as much big spenders as the Republicans. Now, this is a person who was willfully blind. Okay, I take it back. He could just be ignorant. I take it back. Some people just don't follow politics closely enough, and they repeat these mantras they hear from Rush Limbaugh or anybody else. Fine. But if he was looking at the facts, then he was willfully blind, because you know what happened. I've talked about what happened. Whether it was the alternative minimum tax, whether it was spending, whether it was earmarks, what happened in Congress? The Republicans believe in massive debt. Today, the Republicans are properly called big government Republicans. Don't let any Republican tell you he believes in smaller government or she believes in smaller government. If they do, I suggest you laugh in their face and say, tell me a good one. Tell me another joke. And if they look at you with seriousness, say, you know, you're really funny. If you believed in fiscal conservatism, if you believed in no debt, well, you'd be a Democrat. Bill Clinton, whether you like him or lump him, help bring this nation to a surplus. The same Republican Congress with a Republican president brought us to the largest deficits in American history, even apart from the $1 trillion spent on a wasted war we didn't need to fight. But in the most recent battles in Congress, what happened? The Democrats tried to pay for what they wanted. The alternative minimum tax, the AMT, is a tax that was starting to hurt upper-middle-income people, those that earn about $100,000 to $200,000 a year, instead of the upper-upper-income people that it was supposed to hit, those making more than, say, $500,000 a year. And so Democrats and Republicans agreed that that wasn't what it was designed for, and they need to get rid of, raise the limits on it. But the question is, how do you pay for it? Well, the Republicans insisted it not be paid for. The Republicans insisted that we go into massive, massive debt, even further into debt than we already are. The Republicans insisted that China and Saudi Arabia don't own enough of the American land, the American resources. They need to own more, just as Republicans insist on giving huge subsidies to oil companies so that we can become further in debt to our enemies in the Middle East. The Democrats said, no, we want to pay for it. We even made a pledge. It's called pay as you go, that everything we do, we need to pay for it. And we've got a great way to pay for it. We're going to pay for it by saying that those, and it's only about 50,000 taxpayers in the country, that run hedge funds or work for hedge funds and make hundreds of millions a year, indeed the average one of these 50,000 taxpayers, the average one makes $16 million a year. Think about that, the average one. So you have 50,000 people, each making an average of $16 million a year, and they pay less taxes than a waitress or a school teacher or a truck driver or a factory worker. They pay a lower rate. They have not a flat tax, but a regressive tax. They pay at a lower rate. So the Democrats said, look, why don't we let them pay the exact same rate that a teacher pays or, you know, anyone else, doctor, lawyer, the same income tax rate. And that will pay for the whole AMT, the whole alternative minimum tax. And the Republicans said, no, we want debt. We want huge debt. We want massive debt. Shut up, Democrats. Now, the Democrats had two choices there. They could either say, fine, no AMT tax break. We tried to do it the right way. You won't do it. Sorry. And then all these people would have been mad. The Republicans would have gone to the electorate and said, see, the Democrats wouldn't give you the tax cut that you wanted. Or they could compromise with the Republicans, throwing this country further into debt. And what do? They compromised. Now, you can agree with that decision or you can disagree with that decision. But look back at the contradictions. The person who says the Democrats spend as much as the Republicans. Well, they only spend as much as the Republicans when they compromise with the Republicans. And the same speaker who said the Democrats haven't accomplished anything. Well, they accomplished something. They compromised with the Republicans and did the AMT tax fix, right? So here's the deal. Maybe we need more partisanship. Maybe we need less compromise. Maybe we need less accomplishments if those accomplishments are going to be whatever the Republicans want. But the main thing I encourage you today is that whenever you get a friend or a neighbor or colleague or family member that says contradictory things, that says the Democrats, they spend just like much as the Republicans, they're just as much on the take, just as much earmarks, just as much deficit as the Republicans, and also says the Democrats haven't accomplished anything, remind them that they're advocating two exactly contradictory positions. I wonder if you agree with me on this. I wonder what you think about my little discourse to begin the show. Please give me a call. Let me know. The toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. And tell me whether you think the Democrats should compromise more or less, should accomplish more or less. And then when we come back, I'll tell you how I think this all relates to the presidential campaign. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Everyone loves listening to music, but have you ever stopped to think about why it's great for kids to learn to play music? Hi, I'm Darius Rucker from Hootie the Blowfish. These days, it seems people focus way too much on the economics of school music instead of an amazing positive effect it has on kids. It's such a thrill for a child when he or she gets the first instrument or masters a simple part on the flute or performs a showstopper with a school chorus. And there's so much music out there to play and listen to. When kids learn to appreciate a show tune, a Beethoven symphony, or an opera, in addition to what they hear on the radio, it only opens their young minds to the diversity of the world around them. Make sure your kids learn to love music. Support your school music program.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. March is Music in Our Schools Month.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Talking today about a certain kind of political hypocrisy, and not the kind you hear from the parties, and they have their own brand of hypocrisy. Not the kind you hear from the president, who is perhaps the nation's leading hypocrite. I'm talking about the kind of hypocrisy that comes from ordinary political conversations, the kind you and I have every day, whether it be in a shopping mall or the dinner table or some cocktail party or whatever it is. And it usually comes by people who are voters, who certainly consider themselves informed and would frankly be probably insulted if you were to tell them that they're telling you contradictory things. Oh, well, who are you? Who are you presumptuous enough to tell me that I'm contradictory? I know what I want. I want the parties to work together. I want them to work together to do what's good for America, and I want them to stop caving into each other. Hello? Those contradict each other. And what's interesting to me is that I see some of this, not with Barack Obama, but with his supporters. And it's very interesting to me to see whether people can pull it off. And, you know, if Obama can pull it off, heck, then he'll probably gather both independents and progressives and win this election. And that's a good sign if he can pull off this trick because, heck, you know, I want whoever's going to beat the Republicans, whether it be Obama or Clinton or Edwards. But have you noticed that Obama attracts two very different kind of people? He attracts progressives, people to the left of Hillary Clinton, partly, I think, because of his stance on the war. But he definitely attracts people, let's say, the remains of the Kucinich vote. A lot of people, you know, who don't think Kucinich is going to win and therefore have to vote for someone. John Edwards attracts them, too. But I noticed that a lot of progressives are very pro-Obama. They think Obama is going to radicalize America. They want change, right? They want change. And they argue that Obama will give the most change in the Democratic Party. Now, if you're going to go for the most change, the only way I can think that change works, what do you mean the most change? The farthest change from the current government would be, well, I don't know, Dennis Kucinich. I mean, it'd be universal health care, right? It would be bringing the troops home now, which Bill Richardson asked for. It would be, you know, major new programs to help people in education and the homeless, at the same time cutting corporate welfare in dramatic ways. I mean, that's major change. Okay, fine. Maybe that is what Obama stands for. And yet, if you look at the races in Iowa and New Hampshire, Hillary Clinton wins the core Democratic vote, the strong Democratic Party supporters, usually pretty handily. The independents, however, overwhelmingly vote for Obama. Now, independents are usually people in the middle, people who could vote, as some said, as some were telling pollsters, I could vote for Obama or McCain, some of them said, seeing Obama and McCain as more in the middle, more moderate, while you had people like, I don't know, Mitt Romney or Fred Thompson, or they're further on the right. What does it mean when a voter says, I can't decide between Barack Obama or John McCain? Maybe that means, I mean, we know where John McCain stands, right? I mean, you know, he's basically a right-wing conservative. He's a bit of a maverick. He's not as terrible as George Bush. He actually doesn't support torture. He does believe in some form of campaign finance reform. So he's slightly less evil than other Republicans, but still very much on the Republican side. And strongly supports the war in Iraq. Obama is against the war in Iraq, has always been against the war in Iraq. And Obama is certainly not for the Republican principles that John McCain is for, whether it be, you know, banning abortion or promoting, you know, ending gun control or, you know, Republican values, right? Obama believes in fiscal conservatism like the Democrats. He doesn't believe that we should have massive debts. John McCain supports massive debts. He claims to support cuts in spending, but he never really specifies those. So what does it mean when you have someone say, I can't decide between Barack Obama or John McCain? Well, it means maybe the voter's not well informed, or maybe Barack Obama's in the middle. He's the moderate Democrat. He's to the right of Hillary Clinton. He works in the middle. Barack Obama has said there should be no red state, no blue state. Does that mean that he's the one that's going to cooperate with the Republicans? He's going to compromise? He's going to be more bipartisan? Well, that's certainly what his rhetoric says, right? His rhetoric says no red state, no blue state. Americans have to come together. It's a wonderful sentiment. It really is. And then he says he's the one who wants change. Let me suggest to you that Barack Obama has thus far successfully put forward two contradictory ideas. One is that we need dramatic change from the Bush administration, which suggests moving as far away from the Republicans as possible. And the other suggests bipartisanship, working together with the Republicans. No red state, no blue state. So is he to the left of Clinton or to the right of Clinton? Interestingly, I think neither is the case. I really do. I've looked at Barack Obama's positions on a number of issues. I've looked at Hillary Clinton's positions on a number of issues. I've looked at John Edwards' positions on a number of issues. And I got a dirty little secret to tell you. They ain't so different. They're really not. I mean, the differences between them in terms of issues are so arcane that you really have to look for them. On health care, Hillary Clinton and John Edwards would cover all Americans. Obama would say that you're not forced to be covered. Everyone could buy insurance, but no, everyone wouldn't be forced to buy insurance. And then comes the problem, of course, of what do you do with someone who hasn't bought insurance but then gets sick and wants to buy it later? Obama says there's a penalty. We could talk about the difference in health care proposals. I actually think Hillary Clinton has the better one on this subtle difference in issues. On Iraq, well, we know that Obama was against the war early and Clinton was against the war late. She justified her vote the same way, frankly, I've talked about, the way Kerry should have justified his vote. It was in order to give George Bush the threat of the use of force, in order to force Saddam Hussein to bring specters back in, and she didn't think that Bush would misuse that authority. Well, and he did, and if she had known that he would misuse it, you know, obviously she wouldn't have made the vote. Look, you know, it turned out in hindsight to be wrong, but in terms of their future goals, they're not so different. And both of them claim, both Obama and Hillary Clinton, claim to be as much against corporate greed and corporate power as John Edwards is. I mean, you heard Hillary Clinton give the speech after New Hampshire about how she's going to go up against the healthcare companies and others like that. So part of the problem is, and for me, is that I've been on the fence a very long time. I'm probably going to come out with an endorsement soon. I got to, right? I got to vote in a few weeks. But I'm, in terms of their issues, in terms of their policies, John Edwards, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, they're all fine with me. They're all a radical change from any Republican, particularly from George Bush. All of them, I think, are good people who are trying to do good things. You can disagree with specifics. But here's the difference between, let's say, the front runners, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. Hillary Clinton is a known quantity, and Barack Obama is an unknown quantity. Now, I'm not saying that you should necessarily vote for Clinton for that reason. In fact, I think many more Americans may vote for Obama precisely because he is an unknown quantity. You know, people put their hopes and dreams in unknown quantities. People believe that someone who is a bit unknown believes exactly what they believe. And so you have this strange thing happening with Barack Obama. You have progressives, people on the left, talking about change, flocking to Barack Obama. And you have independents, those in the middle, those who want cooperation, compromise. Cooperation sounds so good, whereas compromise sounds so bad, but it's really the same thing with the Republicans, also voting for Obama. And largely, it's the young. Now, there are all kinds of naivete, young and old. So don't see this as a way of attacking young people. Heck, I may vote for Obama myself. But I do think that an unknown person is more able to have these contradictory things in one campaign. Hillary Clinton, interestingly, on the left, is seen as a rightist, and on the right is seen as a leftist. She can't win for losing. She and Obama's policies, I think, are almost exactly the same, and yet she is accused on the left of being far to the right, and they don't accuse Obama of that very much. And on the right, she's accused of being far on the left. The right was practically salivating to get rid of Hillary Clinton and to have Barack Obama there. It'll be interesting to see as the election proceeds how Obama narrows his very wide support, or if it narrows at all. And in fact, if he can pull off this trick, this hat trick, of appealing to people from the far left to the middle. He's going to disappoint a bunch of people. I don't know who, whether it'll be the left or the middle, or maybe just those on the edges of both sides. But if I think he can continue to pull it off, I may vote for him just for that reason. Not because I believe he can be all things to all people, but because I believe that others believe he can be all things to all people, and that way he'll beat the Republican. I don't know. It's kind of like the old physics idea, the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. The more you study something, you actually disturb it in the act of studying it. Could it be that Obama should be voted for not because he tricks you, but because he tricks others? I want to know what you think of my analysis. I want to know if you agree with it or disagree with it. You know what to do. Pick up the phone. 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country that bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise!
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. So I'm opening my mail at work yesterday when I find in one envelope some disgustingly crude collages of Hillary Clinton purporting to show her engaged in certain sex acts. After tossing the envelope out, I got to thinking again about the Hillary haters. What's it all about? It's a question that was raised in New Hampshire as well by the guys who stood up with the Iron My Shirt signs. Let's face it, some of the hatred of Clinton is sexism of the most blatant and egregious sort, and some of it is sexism of a less conscious sort, as when guys view her as overbearing because she's a strong woman or because she's ambitious. Which politician isn't ambitious, I want to know. Some of the dislike of Clinton is certainly legitimate, but it shouldn't rise to the level of hatred. Just as other politicians, she's treated people as tools. For instance, when she and Bill gutted their friend Lonnie Guinier and tossed her overboard. And Hillary's politics sure leave a lot to be desired. Voting for the Iraq War, voting for the Iran resolution, supporting welfare reform and NAFTA and the whole DLC triangulation strategy. But don't be a hater. That only fuels the really dangerous and reactionary currents that are still swirling around strong women. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black. And if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. So I am trying to decide who to vote for. My primary, the primary for Virginia, the District of Columbia, and for Maryland, all occurs a week after Super Tuesday. So the extent that the candidates are still alive after Super Tuesday, we are the next big thing. We're the thing nobody's talking about, but because, heck, they choose half the delegates in Super Tuesday. But if it's still close, they're all going to descend, and, heck, they may descend on us so much, I'll try to get the candidates' representatives right here on the Inside Scoop. But I do find the whole thing fascinating, this whole being all things to all people, the way if you study something, it changes. Bob Kincaid mentions that apparently I'm not the only host that talked about the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. Heck, you know, I'm glad to join in. But the other thing he mentions is, you know, Hillary taking money from corporations. Yes, she does take money from corporations, but they all do, right? I mean, John Edwards takes money from trial lawyers, and Barack Obama takes money from certain lobbyists, but not from other lobbyists. What I find interesting is that really it's just the nature of politics in America today. Money is the mother's milk of politics, and it shouldn't be. That's right, it shouldn't be. We've got to take money out of politics. And, you know, that's how they do it in Europe, right? The government funds the campaigns, and, you know, they're actually much, much shorter than ours. But given that money is in politics, it's very hard to not take that money and to be competitive. It's a Hobson's choice, named after the famous Englishman who basically said when you put your horses outside the door of his saloon, you have to take the horse closest to the door because he wanted the horses to be well rested. The point was you either take that horse or you take no choice. You take no horse. That's called a Hobson's choice. Well, the only person I know who's truly made that Hobson's choice and made it correctly is Russ Feingold, Senator of Wisconsin. Russ Feingold managed to run for a re-election, not an election, but a re-election campaign without taking any money from corporations, from PACs, from lobbyists. He was greatly outspent, and he barely squeaked a victory. This is a very popular senator in Wisconsin. Most people aren't willing to take that risk. Kudos to Russ Feingold. But it's a strange system we have when people are asked to put one hand behind their back to fight. To say, in effect, the Republicans should get as much money from corporations as they want, but the Democrats should take none and should still win. It's not easy to do that kind of thing. And I'll talk more about that in a minute. First, let me go to the phones. Dave from California, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi, Mark. Good program today. I've got a couple of frightful thoughts for you. We've shared them in the past, but I am increasingly convinced that these voting machines have taken our democracy away. I don't think it any longer matters how we go out and vote. I truly feel that. I think an example of it right now is that when you get rid of the voting in the computers, when people just call in, if you had people rapidly calling in, you would find the overwhelming majority of us want Kucinich and Edwards. They would be way up front. But the people that are behind these machines can go in there and flip 80, 90% of Kucinich's votes and give them to Hillary. Hillary's who they want us to have.
Well, Dave, let me take that step by step. First of all, the Iowa, there's only been two contests so far, all right? The Iowa caucuses were public, were absolutely 100% public. They were public voting. People went into rooms with their friends and neighbors, and at the end of the day, they counted the number of people. In fact, if there weren't enough for, say, Kucinich, then the rules of the Iowa caucus, if you don't get 15% in the room, you have to go and caucus with somebody else. And they came, and then each of those precincts were reported publicly. And if any voter who participated in any caucus knew that in that room in wherever, Ames, Iowa, that there were 40 Kucinich supporters and only 3 Hillary supporters, and yet it came out with a vote for Hillary, they could see that, they could complain about it. There's absolutely no way to fix the Iowa caucuses. It's just impossible because it was not a secret ballot. And Iowa, we know, went 38% for Obama and about 30 and 29 for Edwards and Hillary, respectively. Kucinich did not break 5%. That's just the facts with Iowa caucus. Now, the New Hampshire ballot, I'm sure you know, included both some counties, some areas with paper ballots, and some with Diebold machines. That's one where I think you could argue, at least there's a conspiracy. I don't think you can argue at all there's anything with regard to Iowa. I just don't think it's possible.
Well,
and in those... go ahead.
Tell you something about Iowa, and that is that, yes, everybody is very much out front, and they know, but you only know what's going on in your own precinct. And
right.
At some point, they call it all into central, and it's put into a computer, and that's when it happens. Right?
No, but here's the thing. I mean, when you, I don't know, I mean, what newspapers you read after an election. I usually read the Washington Post and the New York Times. But when I go to a local election in Virginia, okay, they will list every precinct in the metro section, including mine, the one where, you know, I went to vote, where, you know, you only have 100 votes here and 100 votes there, something like that. Now, if it were a caucus and I were on the ball, I would check my own individual precinct, and I would see that the numbers are there, and any mathematician could add up all the numbers and make sure that they add up. So, you know, yes, it's certainly – I mean, the point is, if they were to try to cheat in a caucus state, then – any individual, I mean, how would they know where to cheat? Because any precinct they cheated in, somebody could catch them. I mean, there's just no way around that. Now, I was going to get to New Hampshire. Now, in New Hampshire, there were some paperless voting machines. And I've seen the stories in some of the press talking about the fact that Hillary Clinton did better in the Diebold no paper ballot states than she did in the in the paper ones. The trouble with that theory is that she was still getting 35% of the vote even in the paper ballot states. So it was clear that even in the paper ballot states, the polls were dead wrong. And I don't think that's hard to explain. They stopped polling a day before the election, and many things happened in the very quick five-day turnaround between Iowa and New Hampshire. You know, whether you talk about Hillary's emotional moment or some would talk about Obama's snidish remark, you know, you're likable enough, Hillary, or John Edwards talking, I think really hurting Edwards when he, I think, implied that a person who shows emotion shouldn't be president, which some saw as a sexist attack. I mean, a lot happened in that last day to explain the difference in the polls. Even on the paper records, Hillary went way up, and the difference between the paper and the non-paper is that, and it is, again, this makes perfect sense, she was winning the big cities of New Hampshire, such as there are, Manchester and Nashua, where older people tend to live. And Obama was winning the rural areas, which that have the paper ballots, and also the college towns, which tend to have paper ballots. The other thing that is, I just don't see how the Republicans, frankly, would want one or the other. I mean, they seemed very excited about the death of Hillary Clinton's campaign. So I don't particularly buy the conspiracy in New Hampshire, but I'll tell you this. Kucinich, I know, has asked for a recount, and that's good. That's terrific. I think he's paying for it. Let's have one. Let's go through. And let's, you know, increase paper ballots around the country. One thing that I think should be pointed out, Dave, is that we're now up to 35 states. We're not at 50. We need to be at 50. But this is a far cry from 2000 when we had very few, 7 or 8 states that had paper records. We're up to 35, and that's a lot of progress. It's not enough. And you and I, you know, I'll be on the forefront of arguing that every state should have a paper record. But we are getting there, and so I just think that the chances of a stolen election are a lot harder as each year goes by. But I'll give you the last word. Go ahead.
Well, I go back with you a long way on this, and I know that you have much more knowledge of this. I know that you've talked with Clint Curtis. I know that you know that these machines were designed to cheat.
True.
I think you're aware also if you go to Tom Hartman's homepage and see that he has several times over the last several months run these fast-paced polls, just say who you're going to vote for. Nobody's screener or anything. And each one of those elections, Kucinich and Edwards way out front. Hillary.
Yeah, but that's because the people on the left listen to progressive radio. I mean, the shows I do, whether it's on the Head On Radio Network or on WPFW, which is Pacifica, right? I mean, that's part of the trouble with talk radio, I think, is that yes, 95% is right-wing, but the other 5%, I have to say, is left of the Democratic Party. It's not the middle of the Democratic Party. I mean, who's on air that is, you know, a right-of-center Democrat? You know, Lieberman, well, it doesn't even have to be as far as Lieberman. Even, you know, John Bro, I'm trying to think of another example, or Ben Nelson of Nebraska, or even a Bill Clinton Democrat. I mean, who do you know besides me? Because I think actually he mostly did a lot of good, Bill Clinton. I mean, I almost think like I'm holding, because I'm sort of a middle-of-the-road Democratic voter, but most talk radio on the left is far to the left of the middle of the Democratic Party, and that's okay.
Well,
but
Tom Hartman isn't. Tom considers himself the voice of the radical middle, and on many issues, I would not think of him as being on the left. And he has a lot of listeners that are what you would call middle-of-the-road Democrats. And all these folks calling in each time put Edwards in contention. See, the reason there is that, as I see it, is that the high-tech federal Patriot Act troopers, there's nothing for them to be able to rig there. There is no voter machine. There is no computer involved. So the honest vote is what is being tabulated on pen and pencil, paper and pencil. So, and every time it goes that way. So I think we
get okay, but even on paper and pencil, Dave, in New Hampshire, Hillary Clinton got 35% of the vote, and Obama got 36%, and Edwards got, I think, 20%. I mean, it doesn't affect – it does – if you look at just the New Hampshire paper ballot vote, okay, it only changes it by 2 or 3%. So you still have Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, for all intents and purposes, tied within 2% of each other, and you still have John Edwards – a good 15% back, and you still have Dennis Kucinich not earning more than 5%, even if you just count the paper ballots of New Hampshire. So, you know, if there's, you know, the machine ballots did change a little bit the percentages, but it doesn't show a massive support for Dennis Kucinich in New Hampshire.
That's because they rig it. They rig it.
How do they rig the paper ballots, though? They can't rig the paper ballots. That's why I support, and I think you support, paper ballots. You can't rig the paper ballots.
Well,
I don't think there's a single precinct in all of New Hampshire that Kucinich won. And I think there's only one, I remember reading afterwards, there was one town in all of New Hampshire, way up in the north, a town of a few hundred people, that John Edwards won. And that was so they're not winning. Kucinich and Edwards aren't winning the paper ballot towns.
I do believe.
Right?
We've got some real low-character people in office right now. You are well aware of that. And that,
of course, but they're not running the local New Hampshire precincts.
Well.
Right? I mean, you don't think Dick Cheney is somehow managing to control a local New Hampshire precinct with paper ballots, do you?
Not himself. They've hired thousands and thousands of
okay, but how would they manipulate... Okay, I understand how you manipulate the Diebold election machines. You and I know I have done a number of shows. I've had Clint Curtis. I believe Clint Curtis. I know you can flip the machine ballots. I know that. I've done shows on it. I firmly support a paper ballot. Fine. But when you have a paper ballot, you know, other than stuffing the ballot box, which is, you know, the old way it was done before we had the machine, so you can do that too. But other than that, how do you manipulate a paper ballot? Don't think those little old ladies in New Hampshire are all, you know, spies for Dick Cheney. I just don't think so.
You deliver as many people as you can that will vote the way you want them to vote, and then you also
fair.
When you go into the computer, when you put the data in the computer, zap, you can flip it all over the place. And what reporter and what paper would you go to say, I just witnessed a major fraud? They cheated. Well, who would you tell that to? Who would listen? Who would tell his editor, I'm going to expose this? Nowhere.
Dave, Dennis Kucinich is doing the right thing. He has asked, my understanding is, he has asked for a formal recount in New Hampshire that he has to pay for, but is willing to pay for.
Yeah.
Where he is going to count every paper ballot. And I say, go for it, Dennis. Absolutely. Congressman Kucinich, you count every ballot. Let's dispel the theory. I think that's great that he's doing it. Just, you know, I don't think it's like Ohio in 04, but hey, if Kucinich finds a problem, even if he doesn't find a problem, it's better for the process, whether he finds a problem or not. Even if he doesn't find one, then people can feel confidence in it. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I like paper ballots. You can literally count them. So I fully support his effort, but don't think he's going to find anything. But, you know, we'll see.
That's why we've got these fascist neocon criminals in our White House right now, if they rig elections. I'm sure of it. But
we also have them there because the United States Supreme Court decided in an extremely unconstitutional fashion to overturn the rule, you know, the vote of the American people in 2000. I mean, that was not a secret theft. That was a blatant theft in public in the light of day.
Yeah.
So,
yes,
you know.
We let it, happen. And it's hard to believe that we did that.
And that's the thing that really radicalized me, as you know, Dave. I mean, before that, I was a trial lawyer in Los Angeles. It was the Bush v. Gore theft of 2000 that brought me to Washington, gave up my lucrative job to, you know, barely make a living with pennies doing talk radio. But that's you know, I mean, that was a clear conspiracy. That was open theft. That was something that's indisputable. And, you know, that's why I'm here. I just, you know, I have had this debate before, Dave, and I'm always glad to have you come on air. I'm always glad you to raise this question, because we should always be watchful and always careful of the way we vote. There's no question that's something we have to watch. And like I said, I'm glad.
You've been touching on, and that is that too many Democrats right now also have their hand out to these same big corporate special interests that really love what's going on in the White House. They're benefiting from it like crazy. They're saying, hands off. We don't want you doing anything. These people that put the big money in their pocket have a hell of a voice over them. They're owned by the same special interests, and that's frightful. But we've got to weed them out, too, in any way we can.
Go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to say I thank you so much for the program that you have, Mark. You cause us to think, and I'm trying to make us do it backwards.
Well, and I thank you for calling in, and I just, you know, I have always been concerned about the legitimacy of our election. That's frankly the more reason than any other why I came to Washington. It wasn't the surplus, the deficit. It certainly wasn't September 11th. I came before then. It was partly the impeachment of Bill Clinton, but it was mostly the Supreme Court decision of Bush v. Gore. I mean, that's what began my whole political career, right, with the layman's guide to Bush v. Gore that I penned in 2000, and seemed to be, you know, telling the whole world, hey, the emperor has no clothes. Part of it is that my background is, I consider myself a liberal. I don't consider myself a leftist. And my definition, I know Bob was asking me what the definition is. One of my definitions that I would use growing up was a liberal wants to work within the system to change it, to make it better. And a leftist wants to overthrow the system. And even work outside the system, if necessary, to overthrow the system. That's my definition. It may not be yours. That's okay. But my point is, prior to Bush v. Gore, prior to 2000, I thought we could work in within the system to change it. That's what democracy was all about. That's the America I know and love, working within the system to change it, not violent revolution. And then came 2000. And I don't know whether that pushed me from liberal to leftist or not, but it certainly showed me that the system itself was rotten, that the system itself was corrupt, that the United States Supreme Court in the light of daytime could take the voters of America and throw their election verdict in the trash can. That radicalized me and has made me more open than I ever was before to look at conspiracy theories, to see whether or not we have election machines, for example, that could be manipulated, and that's one of the reasons why I was one of the early people to bring Clint Curtis on my show. I think Clint Curtis has a very persuasive argument that machines in Florida have been and can be manipulated. I've brought on people that have a persuasive argument that in Ohio, particularly when you had Secretary of State Kenneth Blackwell do his best, and this again is in the open daytime, right, to deny blacks, to deny liberals, to give them the voting machines they need. I'll never forget, and this you don't need to look in secret for some conspiracy. We all remember the lines in the rain on Election Day in 2004 in Ohio in liberal precincts in places like Cleveland, which vote 86% or something for the Democrats. Long lines of people in the rain standing there waiting for hours and hours to have a chance to vote, while Republican precincts, they just walk in and pull the lever, because there's only, say, two machines in a precinct that needs to have 20. And, of course, people get pneumonia. People risk their lives. Older people, who often vote Democratic, can't stay in the rain with health problems. They have to leave. That was theft out in the open. So while at the same time as I want paper ballots, you know it, Dave, everyone here knows, I've been fighting for that for all of my career in politics and in the radio. I think that we need to talk about the open thefts at least as much as we talk about the secret ones we can't prove. So I guess my bottom line on New Hampshire is, Dennis Kucinich, go for it. Go. By all means, count the records. I don't believe that there was a major problem, but heck, if you can prove me wrong, by all means, prove me wrong, and let's all fight to have paper records everywhere. I do think it's particularly difficult to manipulate paper records. One of the things you can do is that, particularly in a general election, just about every precinct in the country requires poll watchers to be both a Democrat and a Republican. I have been such a poll watcher for the Democratic Party. And generally that... Oh, I didn't know you were still on, Dave. I didn't know you were still on the phone. I thought you'd gone.
Yeah, we can't see what's going on in those machines. But
No. Well, you're right about the machines. That's my point. I think if you have poll watchers and you have a paper record, we can be pretty confident of the results. I mean, yes, if someone could stuff a ballot sneakily behind someone's back, even if they did that, how much could you stuff it? I mean, if you in one precinct, if someone were caught doing it, they would go immediately to jail. And how much could they stuff it? 20 votes, 30 votes in one precinct? I don't think that people with a paper record can stuff, you know, 100 precincts or 1,000 precincts enough to fix an election. I do agree with Dave strongly, though, that with electronic, you can electronically stuff ballots and no one can ever know, which is why I'm very proud of the fact that we have 35 states and now have paper records. It's not enough. It's not enough. But it is coming, and I think, I need to double check this, I think Ohio is one of the ones that's changing it since they all got Democrats in there. Let me conclude. I only got a few minutes left. I want to thank Dave for his call. Let me conclude by just asking, when you talk to people, to catch them in their contradictions. That when someone says to you, I think the Democrats haven't accomplished anything in Congress, and I think they're compromising too much with the Republicans, remind them that that is a contradiction. Because they had two choices with the filibustering Republicans and the vetoing president. They could choose to accomplish nothing and not compromise, something that, frankly, I wish they'd done. Or they could accomplish a lot and compromise with the Republicans, which is what they largely did. But you can't have it both ways. And if you look at the first votes of the Democratic Congress, you'll see that the first votes were generally good. It was only after the filibuster and the vetoes that they had to eventually compromise. And I would love to see the Democratic candidates for president asked the ultimate question. You know, the press asked them so many questions. I mean, all the questions about the first black president, the first woman president, yeah, that's all titillating. It's all interesting. It's all important in a historical sense. But where is the commentator to sit Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama or John Edwards down? We know what Kucinich's views are. But sit Obama, Edwards, or Clinton down and say, what would you have done if you were in Nancy Pelosi's shoes, if you were in Harry Reid's shoes? And the Republicans were filibustering all these great ideas you have. Would you have chosen to compromise with them the way they did or to shut down the government? Now, they have an easy out. They'll say, well, when I'm president, we won't need to because I'm not going to veto things the way Bush will. And that's an easy out. But I think we would learn a lot about the candidates if we asked them whether they would be bipartisan or partisan when the chips came down. Which would they do on the energy bill, on the deficit, on earmarks, on the war in Iraq? We would learn a lot about the candidates that way. And frankly, I'd learn a lot about Barack Obama. Is he the agent of change, or is he the agent of bringing this country together? I still don't know. But that's it for the Inside Scoop. I hope I made you think a little bit today. This is Mark Levine signing off.